intelligence and instinct than fear, she reached out to take it. But as she did, the engines in the plane began to roar. The nose dove downward, and Miniver's body slammed up against the bedroom wall. Though he couldn't hear it, Cal could tell she cried out as the metal headboard of the bed no doubt bruised her ribs, and her grip on the upper bar slipped. She lost control as the plane then began to tailspin, and loose objects in the room went flying, including the hollow box. Cake splattered against the ceiling, and containers of tea and wine spun, sending their wet contents sailing in a painter's montage across the room. The sound of glass plates and mugs shattering was drowned out by the monstrous whine of the plane's twin engines, as was Miniver's scream as her body floated upward. Cal now acted entirely on instinct, making the only choices he could in a desperate situation. He transported from where he was standing to the back of the bed, popping back into existence directly behind Miniver. His arm slid around her waist. He pulled her tightly against him and transported once more, instantly taking them both out of the jet plane. A moment later, they both reappeared, standing on the hard-baked sand of a desert ground. Caliban was accustomed to such fast transportations. His shiny black dress shoes were planted firmly on the earth, and his narrowed gaze glared upward at the falling jet plane that was merely more than blinking lights and a shining surface in the reflection of a quickly setting sun. But Miniver had a few thousand more transports to go before she would be used to it. The scream she had begun in the jet plane now continued, but much more audibly. She was still grasped firmly in the steel coil of Caliban's right arm, and he could feel the air leave her lungs beneath his tightly gripping fingertips. Little by little, the scream faded away, and she began to tremble. The sensation of this beneath his touch did odd things to Cal, and he found himself looking down, away from the jet. With a wide, bewildered gaze, he watched the top of her head as she slowly looked up, following his former gaze. A popping sound, far enough away to be muted, but loud enough to be felt, forced him to look up once more. He found the plane just as its real tailspin began. One of the craft's engines had exploded, and the other was going to follow closely on its heels. Caliban took a deep breath, releasing the woman in his arms. She took an unsteady step away from him and turned to face him. He met her gaze, but said nothing. Then he concentrated. What he needed to do next would take a good deal of his strength, and the need for it couldn't have come at a worse time. He closed his eyes. The ground beneath his feet began to light up with the glow of Fey power. The air around him changed, filling up with something thicker but invisible. If it could be seen by mortal eyes, humans would liken it to an incandescent fog of black, shimmering and mesmerizing. Within its depths would be lightning bolts, fissures of incredible heat, as magic met magic and exploded. This unseen force expanded exponentially within split seconds, moving outward in an ever-widening circle of unseelie influence. He heard Miniver gasp as the black wave slammed into her, sliding lightning-fast across her skin like electrified silk, touching her in a way that no man would ever dare. He knew the effect it would ultimately have upon her, and the distraction of that thought didn't help him any. To him it felt like a short lifetime as the strength it took to manipulate the physical nature of the world drained him so thoroughly, he almost swayed on his feet. But in actuality, it was mere seconds before the spinning, smoldering, out-of-control aircraft a mile above them began to disintegrate. Little by little, like a 3D-rendered, pixelated drawing on an animator's screen, the airplane dissolved into thin air from its nose to its tail, until at last there was nothing left of it but the bizarre, inexplicable smoke trail it had left behind it. The Airbus 319 corporate jet vanished with the last of the sun, winking out of existence just as the massive star slipped past the final boundaries of Earth's horizon and cast the Nevada desert into darkness. For a moment, he and Miniver simply stood there in that fresh, quiet night, gazing up at the newly blackened sky and its quickly diminishing trail of vapor and smoke. A cool breeze touched Caliban's hair. He saw it whisper through a lock of Minerva's, making it dance like spider's silk. The stars above them winked at them, as if keeping their secrets. They'd seen what the unseelie king had done. They seemed to find it amusing. Somewhere in the not-too-far distance, a coyote yipped, and a few more joined in. Something scuttled in a Russian thistle bush a few feet away. The night was all-encompassing, all-consuming, until at last Minerva Tristane turned around to face him. Caliban tried to remain standing tall. The disintegration spell had drained him horribly. Causing things to unexist was as difficult as conjuring something from nothing. Physically impossible, magically improbable, and highly taxing. He was hungry now, deep down in his soul. Minerva licked her lips.
"I couldn't do anything," she said. "I froze up."
Her voice was unbelievably steady for what she had just gone through. But he could tell it was a facade. Her arms she had crossed over her chest. Her teeth were clenched to keep from chattering, and her words were spoken through gritted teeth.
"All the power in the world I'm supposed to have, and all I could do was scream."
Caliban shook his head. He wanted to console her. He understood fully why she'd done what she'd done. The downside of being a wisher was a sensitivity most people could not fathom. And one of the many problems with sensitivity was that fear could grip you harder and tighter than it could anyone else. It could make you breathless. It could squeeze your heart right out of your chest and into your throat. But before he could think of what to tell her, Minerva spoke again.
"But you sure came through," she said softly,
whispering her words now before they were eaten up by the desert breeze and carried to the coyote's ears half a mile away. She shook her head in bewilderment, her eyes as large and bright as the moon above.
"How the hell did you do that?"
A beat passed.
"And can you teach me?"
Chapter 8. The diner reminded Minerva of that famous painting of the cafe on a dark street with Marilyn Monroe and James Dean inside. She was pretty sure there was someone else in there, too, though she couldn't remember who. Her sister would know. She was the painter. She paused on the doorstep as Caliban filled the doorframe in front of her, his hand on the knob. He turned and glanced back at her as if sensing her hesitation, and once again Minerva was struck with the extreme oddity of this situation. He was the Unseelie King, and he was alone with her in the middle of nowhere, leading her into a deserted cafe on a deserted street on a hot summer night that the desert had actually turned a little cold. He was doing these things rather than ruling, from a dark throne, a dark land filled with even darker wonders. And she still had to wonder why. Caliban opened the door, sounding the bell above it like Christmas chimes in the strange silence. She followed him inside. He chose a table for them at the far end of the booths along the windows on one side, and she slid into the vinyl-covered seat across from him. The floor-to-ceiling window to her right reflected the empty bar to her left, and behind that reflection, a vast and unyielding darkness awaited on the other side of the glass. The difference between this diner and the one in the painting was that outside of this restaurant, there were no city streets or other buildings. This diner sat alone on the side of a dirt road that was literally in the middle of a desert in what Caliban had assured her was Nevada. There was nothing else for miles around, and because of this, a pump with gasoline had been installed at the front of the restaurant for desperate empty gas tanks. Maps were sold on a rotating stand by another window for the lost owners of those desperate empty gas tanks. There was no one at the counter, and no one had yet responded to the sound of the bell. Though the restaurant gleamed with cleanliness, she imagined that customers were infrequent. Maybe the owners weren't keeping an ear out for the bell. She had never felt more isolated than she did out here, so far from the rest of humanity. It felt like the rest of the world had actually vanished like the yet unscary but sort of spooky mysterious beginning of a Stephen King novel. In a strange way, she really liked it. It took some of the sharpness off the razor edge of the shock the last 48 hours had given her. She even felt a little relaxed, like she could exhale.
"I have to tell you," Caliban said, as he slid his jacket off and set it down beside him on the vinyl bench. "You are handling this transition exceptionally well."
He leaned back to drape his left arm over the top of the red sparkly seat, causing the muscles in his arm to flex against his dress shirt.
"I'm actually a little surprised."
Minerva bit her lip and tried to suppress a smile, but failed.
"You mean that you expected me to faint a whole bunch? Or maybe run around screaming and pulling out my hair?"
she asked softly. Across from her, the unseely king blinked and went still in his seat. His eyes were fixed on her lips, and when she realized this, her smile slipped, becoming self-conscious. He cleared his throat and shifted in his seat, then ran a hand through his jet-black hair.
"Not in so many words."
Minerva followed his movements, and found her attention glued to his biceps as he unconsciously flexed them in his movements. She swallowed hard and looked down at the plastic tabletop.
"To be honest," she said softly, "I'm surprised too."
Yes, she'd grown used to unpleasant surprises. But the murder of her parents was one hell of an unpleasant surprise, and it had been topped with the galactic revelation of her being a wisher. He was probably in his rights to expect she'd be babbling and drooling by now.
"Everything came into me at once," she told him.
He leaned forward, placing his arms on the tabletop and folding his hands together. She could feel his attention focus on her, almost as if it were a kind of heat. She went on.
"For 36 years I thought I was a human being."
She paused, adding with some reluctance but absolute honesty,
"I thought I was a very flawed human being, but still human."
She shook her head.
"And then, the day before yesterday, my adoptive parents are murdered."
The word left a strange numbness on her tongue, making her next words more difficult to form.
"And suddenly I realized I'd been wrong all along."
She looked back up at him as emotion threatened, at last, to overwhelm her.
"I'm not human after all."
Still flawed, she thought, so very flawed, but not at all human. Minerva warmed under the unseely king's gem-like gaze. He shifted, straightening a bit, and Minerva caught a glimpse of something red in the folds of his dress shirt. She frowned and leaned forward.
"You're bleeding."
He looked down, and then looked worriedly up at her. A flood of numbing horror went through Minerva as she recalled everything she'd done to him on the back steps of her adoptive parents' Oxford home.
"Oh, my God,"
she whispered. He was bleeding from several injuries across his midsection and up and down his arms.
"Did I do that to you?"
What was the punishment for attacking the king? She knew the answer to that. The punishment for attacking the king in any manner was death. And she had out and out tried to kill him. A new kind of fear pierced through her with ferocity. The unseelie fae could be very imaginative when it came to killing. Thoughts came unbidden to Minerva's mind. Images of devices, and creatures, and methods. The palms of her hands began to sweat. A coldness swept through her, and she wondered how far she would get trying to run from someone like the unholy king in a desert the size of Nevada. But then, quite suddenly and unexpectedly, Caliban reached out and grabbed her hand. It was a tight grip, but not a painful one. Rather, it was tender. She tried to pull away as heat moved from her chest into her neck and then her cheeks. But he held her fast and pointed firmly to his chest with his free hand.
"This isn't your fault, Minerva."
His unnatural violet eyes had hardened into amethysts, faceted and multidimensional, sliced through with shards of emerald.
"This is my fault, for not finding you and helping you sooner."
Miniver heard his words and processed them in a slow kind of wonder. As she did, the cold fear that had all but engulfed her thawed. Once it did, she found, quite unexpectedly, that she was worried about him. She actually felt guilty.
"Why didn't it heal?"
she asked. "Why is it bleeding now?" Caliban's eyes shimmered. They glittered with something untold. Miniver absorbed the details. His skin was more pale than it had been before. There was a new darkness under his eyes, too, that gave his handsome features a haunted quality.
"You're weakened, aren't you?"
It wasn't a question. She was simply putting the pieces together and expressing her findings out loud.
"That's why you can't heal yourself. I attacked you with iron."
The king sighed. "It's a number of things."
"That spell you cast to make the plane vanish, it was a big one, wasn't it?"
He didn't reply, but from the way his eyes cut to her and his lips parted, she knew she was right. It was the magic he'd used on the plane that was further weakening him. A new and horrible idea occurred to her, and she felt the blood leave her face.
"Oh my God! You didn't transport it, did you?"
She'd assumed he'd transported the pilot away, then moved the plane somewhere safer to crash, maybe even a different realm. But now she realized she'd been wrong.
"You disintegrated it."
Caliban's pained expression was again all the answer she needed. She stood up in a new fury, leaning over the table.
"There was a pilot on that plane."
"No," he corrected. "There wasn't. Not any longer. He was already dead when I destroyed the aircraft." Miniver went still. That coldness was back, working its way diligently into her chest and heading for her heart.
"He was dead."
She felt bewildered.
"How?"
"Dark energy. Dark magic," he replied simply. "I'm uncertain what kind. There wasn't time to study it. But suffice it to say, he died quickly."
"Why would someone want to take out the pilot?"
She asked the question, even as she realized there was no need. It was a stupid question. Taking out the pilot would put the plane in jeopardy, and that meant someone was trying to get to you. Caliban filled in for her. "They knew they couldn't do it directly, not with me protecting you, so they did the next best thing." Miniver very slowly sat back down.
"But why?"
She felt like a child suddenly, asking such a thing. Were they after her because she was a wisher? Was it a fae of some sort? It would make sense. The fae feared her kind. But what fae was powerful enough to take out the Unseelie King's private jet pilot? She knew he had to have been protected too.
"Who?"
she asked next.
"That is the trillion-dollar question, my dear," said Caliban absently, as he again glanced down at his own chest to see that the bloodstains had spread. "We've been under the impression that the queens were wanted by Cayman very much alive. This would seem to indicate the contrary."
Mentally skipping over all of the very important things he'd just said in order to focus on the single most important thing, Miniver asked,
"They want me dead?"
Caliban looked up, and this time when he did, he captured her gaze with a kind of power that immobilized her in her seat and opened her up to him like an open book. It would have been impossible for her to look away now, and she realized he'd been going easy on her all this time. This was the real Unseelie King. Relentless. Even cruel.
"Oh, yes,"
he said, in that faintly accented voice that made goosebumps rise across her flesh. "Very much so." Chapter 9. It was approximately 5 or 6 seconds later that Miniver was able to digest the rest of what Caliban had just told her.
"Wait.
Queens. Cayman.
Run that all by me again."
Caliban's gaze narrowed. He studied her carefully, then leaned over the table toward her.
You really don't know, do you?
Don't know what?
He shook his head. How can you be aware of what you are, of the Fae, and of the Unseelie, and even of who I am, but not know this?
What's this? She asked. What is it that I don't know?
She waited as he sat back again and seemed to puzzle over something. He absent-mindedly touched his hand to his chest, and then winced. More blood soaked through his shirt. It was going from white to red in record time. He was hurt because he was guarding her from something, from someone.
"Why are you protecting me?"
she asked then.
"Where the hell is the waitress?"
he demanded suddenly, ignoring her question and frowning toward the back door. His eyes hardened into purple diamonds.
"Someone should have been out by now."
"I have the right to know,"
she insisted, leaning toward him.
"What's going on? Who is this Cayman person? And what do you mean by queens?"
"Something's wrong," he said, as his gaze focused.
In one graceful move, he slid to the end of the bench and stood up, rising to his impossible, indomitable height. Minerva blinked. He was intimidating without even meaning to be. But then she glared. She scooted to the end of her own bench and joined him, jumping to her feet.
"What do you mean?"
she asked, looking from him to the double metal doors at the back of the cafe. He was contemplating them in stern silence.
"No one came out to greet us when we sounded the bell at the door," he told her.
"No, but..."
That was true. Someone probably should have come out by now, but shit happens.
"Maybe they didn't hear it, or maybe they're in the bathroom."
"I don't hear anyone in the kitchen at all," he said. "I also don't sense any life in this establishment beyond us."
Again, Minerva blinked.
"You don't sense any life?"
He turned and regarded her, tilting his handsome head to one side to contemplate her with the same intense scrutiny that he'd used to study the back door a moment earlier. It made Minerva feel trapped. It was strange to suddenly realize she was completely alone in a deserted cafe with a man who was half a foot taller than her, and who no doubt weighed 100 pounds more, all of it muscle, to say nothing of the magic he harbored.
"You could do the same with a bit of training," he told her, interrupting her thoughts. "You possess the natural talent, the natural magic. You're simply undisciplined."
Minerva's adrenal gland came wide awake, and she was suddenly very much unafraid of him. What fear there had been a moment ago was hastily overrun with mounting outrage.
"Excuse me?"
Had he just called her undisciplined?
"What the hell is that supposed to mean?"
she demanded. If anything at all, she was the most disciplined person on the face of the fucking planet. She put up with humanity's bullshit every single day, and she had yet to stash a single body in her trunk. That was pretty damn disciplined. The corners of Caliban's mouth curled up in an amused and secret smile. Minerva took a step back.
"Are you baiting me?"
she asked him.
"Not at all. You're simply too sensitive."
"That's typical for a wisher," he replied matter-of-factly. Minerva's bloodstream filled up with even more adrenaline as Caliban turned and strode purposefully toward the double doors at the back of the cafe. She looked after him for a minute, stewing in an increasingly strong cocktail of emotions, before she finally jerked herself out of her own anger and stormed off in the same direction. He pushed through the metal double doors and into the kitchen beyond. Minerva had caught up and was stepping into the kitchen right behind him when the darkness hit her. It would have been difficult to describe it any other way. It wasn't actually dark. It wasn't as if the lights grew dim or the shadows grew long or anything so poetic. It was simply that everything felt as if it had been cast into doubt. It was too quiet. The air felt thick with something wrong.
"What is it?"
she whispered as her gaze combed over the very still, very sterile kitchen. It was patently clear no one had been in here cooking any time recently.
"Magic,"
Caliban replied.
You're becoming increasingly capable of sensing it because of your proximity to me.
Minerva let most of that go and focused on the important bit.
Someone was casting magic in this cafe.
No, not was.
He corrected. His gaze was focused on the back door to the kitchen. It was slightly ajar. The night beckoned beyond it, eerily illuminated by a flickering light that most likely hung over the back doorstep.
Someone is casting magic in this cafe.
Minerva was reminded of the Goldilocks fairy tale. Someone's been sleeping in my bed, Father, and she's still here. Caliban moved like a shield in front of her as they crept toward that back door. If the moments of her life had been a horror movie, she would have imagined ominous music playing just then, increasing in volume and key to indicate approaching danger. She could also swear she felt waves of jagged power coming off Caliban. It was different than it had been when she'd first met him in Oxford. It wasn't nearly as strong now, but it was more ragged and sharp. He was irritated, agitated.
Stop!
She said suddenly. A whirlwind of things occurred to her at once. It was like someone had turned on a movie projector in her mind. It had happened to her before. She felt like Sean Spencer from Psych when it happened. Little bits and pieces of things she'd unconsciously noticed before would suddenly spill out into her consciousness, making her aware of them and their meanings. She saw the front of the cafe and its lighting that reminded her of that painting. Then she saw the red, sparkling vinyl booths. Next was the bar at the back of the cafe, where she could imagine truckers taking in a fat, heavy breakfast, and weary travelers filling up on countless cups of fresh, hot coffee. She turned back toward the kitchen behind her. It really was pristine. It really did look like it had never been used. She felt Caliban turning to face her. She could feel his eyes on her like laser beams.
"What is it?"
he asked.
"I'm not sure."
She moved like a zombie back through the gleaming stainless steel countertops and unscratched pots and pans that hung from a holder in the ceiling. She pushed through the swinging double steel doors and into the dining area beyond. Her eyes raked over the seats. Seats that would have been sitting in the hot Nevada sun for months at the very least, but which bore not a single crack, or even any fading. She turned her attention to the ground. There was no dust, no crumbs, no footprints or dirt blown in from outside.
"It's impossible,"
she whispered.
"It's not real,"
came Caliban's assessment behind her. She spun to face him, and her own panic matched the new emotion on his face.
"None of this is real."
"No, it isn't,"
he agreed tersely. His gaze left hers to slide along the same tables and windows and floor.
"It's all an illusion."
Chapter 10 Cal rushed to the diner's front doors and reached out to grasp the handle of one, but stopped just short of touching it. Minerva was right behind him.
"What?"
she asked, breathless with fear.
"Why did you stop?"
"The doors could be cursed."
He felt something radiating off them. It was like coming too close to dry ice. He withdrew, swearing softly under his breath. He'd been entirely off his game. The hunger inside him was growing, demanding he take what he needed and heal. His wounds were splitting apart and burning, as iron wounds were wont to do. He was growing irritable. His words were becoming acidic. Minerva was right. He had been baiting her. He couldn't help it. He wanted to start a fight with her. He wanted her to attack him. Hell, he needed it. Because if she attacked him, then he would be well within his rights to defend himself. If she dared cast a wish at him, he would have every right to throw her up against a wall, pin her by her wrists, and take her mouth with his own, just to shut her up. Because everyone knew that a wish's most dangerous weapon was her tongue. Caliban took a very deep breath and tried for all he was worth to focus on what was happening. He pinched the bridge of his nose and closed his eyes. Think, damn it. They'd walked into a trap.
The diner was nothing more than an illusion. He had no idea how extensive it was or when the other shoe was going to drop. He had no idea what was going to happen. This wasn't like him at all. Someone else was here or had been here very recently. Someone very powerful was using illusory magic and had successfully lured them into one of the most elaborate cages Cal had ever seen. It was incredible how well it had been laid. Once he'd realized his pilot was dead and the plane was doomed, he transported himself and Miniver to the ground and disintegrated the plane to destroy evidence and spare anyone below from harm. Having done this, it was up to him to decide what to do next. He could have transported them again, but it was plain that his attacker was one step ahead of him. The enemy seemed to know him. So Cal had done something a little out of character and suggested that they walk.
"Walk?"
she'd asked, with a disbelieving look at the extent of dry land around them.
"We'll be safer," he'd insisted.
The Fae were very good at finding their way through nature. They were excellent trackers, deadly hunters. Caliban knew which direction to go in order to find civilization. He even knew how long it would take. A few hours or so at most. It was night, and their travels would be over before the dehydrating, burning rays of the sun were high again in the sky. Finally, he knew that if they were hungry or thirsty, his Fae magic could at the very least provide them sustenance. He was the Unseelie King, after all. He could transform air to chocolate in a way that would put a hollow box to shame. But it turned out that none of this had been necessary. They'd run into incredibly good fortune when they topped a hill to find what appeared to be a relatively well-traveled dirt road and, of all things, a restaurant. The diner's lit-up sign read, "Alice's Cup of Tea." Or it would have, anyway, if Alice's E and the peeing cup hadn't both been burned out. Looking back now, maybe that was the detail that had fooled him. Caliban couldn't be sure. Whatever it was, he and Miniver had both naturally assumed the cafe to be authentic, and they traipsed right inside and sat down. "Son of a bitch," he thought now in pure, broiling frustration. How much damage had already been done? Why was the illusion here? Who was behind this? And what the hell were they waiting for? Caliban gritted his teeth until he felt they might crack. He squeezed his eyes shut so tight they hurt. But neither helped him focus. His wounded body was raging. He'd never had to wait this long for healing magic. If he ever ailed of so much as a splinter, 10 women would hone in on him as if he were a beacon. He could take his pick. His body was well aware of this. It was out of control, like a terribly spoiled child. It wanted what his mind knew it could not have. He couldn't stop imagining what it would feel like to press Miniver up against that wall and feel every inch of her furious body against his as he captured her lips and drank her in. She would probably fight him. She may be the most empathetic soul on the planet, but that also meant she was one of the strongest. She didn't like injustice one bit. She no doubt rooted for the underdog. Likely she stood up for the weaklings against bullies. She would consider his actions wrong, and she would probably use every physical defense she could muster to rally against him. And they would all fail, and he would win anyway, because that was who he was, and she was who he wanted. "I want her." It was more than the healing her touch would give him. It was more than a hunger he felt for her strength and magic and power. Oh, it was so much more. "I need her."
"Your Majesty?"
she asked, and he felt a gentle hand on his shirt sleeve. He glanced down at her fingers, taking in their long, slim grace. From the tone of her voice, he would wager this wasn't the first time she'd tried to get his attention, which might be why she'd resorted to referring to him as "Your Majesty." He had been lost in his selfish thoughts, and she'd lost patience. Irritation rode him hard.
"It's Caliban," he told her between gritted teeth. "Call me Caliban."
There was silence behind him. Her hand dropped. He fought the urge to snatch it back again. Instead, he turned to face her, and with immense control he managed to school his thoughts and tame the beast inside him long enough to plaster an indifferent expression on his face, and keep the red from entering his eyes. If they started to glow with fire, they would both be done for. Cal will work as well. She watched him in uncertainty, her gaze darting every now and then to the room around him, a room which they both now knew was fake.
"Take my hands,"
he instructed calmly, holding his hands out palm up for her.
"I'll transport us again, this time to some place crowded. It's our safest bet."
"Do you think you have it in you?"
she asked, nodding toward the red on his shirt. No doubt she was also wondering what the people in the crowded place they transported to would think of all that blood.
"I do."
He held his hands up a little higher, his entire body tensing with anticipation and need. This time she took them. Her skin was cool and dry against his, a balm of sweet, unbelievable relief. He was burning up. If a mortal had taken his temperature just then, they would have wanted to put him on ice. But if she noticed this difference, she expertly managed not to show it. Maybe she knew this was not the time, or maybe she simply knew that he was in a rough state and realized there was no point in dwelling on it. Rather, she maintained eye contact with him, kept her expression serious, and waited patiently, exhibiting a kind of faith in him that he didn't even have in himself. Caliban's grip closed gently over her fingers. He straightened, closed his eyes, and focused on her touch. Even this small gesture, this brief and impersonal contact, was already having a curative effect upon him. He could feel one of the slices in his chest begin to mend, as if a doctor were pulling its two edges together with invisible thread. He felt a small bit of her magic infuse his bloodstream, cooling it off like an ice cube thrown into a boiling pot of water. He hadn't even realized his head had been throbbing until it at last began to let up, easing its pressure off his temples and sinuses, and opening up his air passages like an oxygen mask. He took a deep breath. He'd been worse off than he thought. That iron had really done him ugly. When he opened his eyes this time, he could actually see the edges of the illusion he and Minerva had walked right into. He'd been oblivious to it before, completely bamboozled by the minute detailing of the expertly crafted spell, and the fact that he couldn't pull his mind away from the needs of his body. Whoever had cast the illusion of the cafe possessed immense power. But it shouldn't have fooled him. Yet it had. And Minerva had pulled the wool away from his eyes with a single touch. She was already more powerful than he was. She just didn't know it yet. "We're going to make an amazing team," he thought wistfully. Then he blinked. He was surprised at the thought. It wasn't like him to be sentimental, and the timing was way off. But there it was, all the same. At once he released Minerva's left hand and turned, raising his right hand outward as he moved. Magic poured from his outturned palm, resembling shadows, pixie dust, and fog. He dragged his arm through space in a way that forced it to relinquish its hold on time, and the diner in front of him wavered. He heard Minerva gasp as, little by little, the illusion around them was dispelled. The cafe seemed to disintegrate inch by inch, just as the plane had. Caliban turned a full circle, Minerva turning with him, and all the while he maintained his grip on her right hand. At last they stood in the center of a small plain in the vast desert. There was not another sign of life as far as the eye could see. Caliban looked down. Around 20 feet away, a red ruby the size of a man's fist pulsed with fresh color and life.
"I should have known,"
he muttered. He released Minerva's hand and strode toward the ruby. He bent and picked it up, knowing it would do him no harm. In fact, he knew exactly why it pulsed red and glowing and, oh, so beautiful.
"There's another one,"
said Minerva behind him. He turned and she pointed to the second pulsing ruby several feet away. There was a third as well, and a fourth. Four pulsing, glowing, blood-red rubies at the four corners of what had once been an illusory diner. "Grab them," he instructed calmly. He did the same, moving quickly toward the second ruby. Minerva did as instructed, perhaps instinctively knowing it was important. When they had all four rubies, they met once more in the middle and combined them in their open palms.
"What are they?"
"Rubies," Caliban replied. Minerva probably would have asked why they were pulsing, but the rubies chose that very moment to stop pulsing. Within a few seconds, the rubies had all died down into their normal rosy red hues. They glimmered with perfect multifacets, and if they had been taken to a jeweler, they would have sold for millions apiece, perhaps billions. Maybe they would have wound up in museums.
"What just happened?"
Cal took a deep breath.
"Black diamonds are used to store magic,"
he began, lowering his hands to squeeze the rubies between his fingers.
"They've been used for centuries by all manner of magic user, from fae to warlock. But they are also used to take magic. These were once black diamonds. They're rubies now because they've taken my magic. This is how rubies are made. They're actually no more than black diamonds that have stolen fae magic. This was the point of the illusion."
He squeezed the forsaken stones between his fingers until he was afraid they might shatter.
"To drain me, and probably you as well."
Minerva looked from him to the stones and back again.
"Well, can you take the magic back now?"
He shook his head.
"No. Once it's taken, it's gone forever."
No wonder he'd felt so horrible.
"Rubies are a one-way door. There's no going back."
Chapter 11
Minerva ran a hand through her white blonde hair and took a step back from the unseelie king so she could breathe. His proximity to her was starting to have a strange effect on her. She had so many questions for him, but she was smart enough to prioritize. Someone was trying to kill her, and according to him, they seemed to be always one step ahead. She needed to think. First things first, they needed to get somewhere truly safe, some place that they wouldn't be expected to go.
"Do you have enough magic left to transport us again?"
she asked.
"I do. But I believe it would be wise to spare it in case we fall under attack."
"Okay, that makes sense."
She thought some more.
"All right. Can I wish us out of here?"
Caliban's expression was unreadable, but there was a tightness to his jaw and that darkness under his eyes. They had her worried.
"The truth is, I don't know," he told her. "Wishes are known for casting magic after the fact. Vengeance spells. Wishes made in anger, but..."
"But?"
"Well, frankly, you're different, Minerva. I honestly have no idea what you're capable of."
"Then I'm going to try."
He held up a single finger, juggling the rubies with both hands as he did. Minerva watched as he tried to slide them into his trouser pockets, where they then bulged like horse-riding pants. He changed his mind, pulled them back out, and looked down at the red-stained pen pocket on his ruined dress shirt. His tight jaw got tighter. Minerva held out her hands.
"Here, give them to me."
He looked at her questioningly. In that moment he reminded her of someone much smaller than he was, someone much weaker, someone open and innocent even. It made her chest feel funny. She tried to give him a reassuring look, and forced her voice into dulcet tones. She was good at that.
"Look, I know that you want to keep them because they have your magic in them, so..."
She gestured rather desperately to her open hands.
"Trust me, and hand them over, okay?"
He glanced down at her hands, hesitated a second more, then carefully placed all four rubies in her palms. Minerva thought for a moment, turning the extraordinary perfect rubies between her fingers. She had been planning on using a wish on one of the rubies to see whether she could successfully transport it from one place to another, and not have it come out looking like the fly. But now a different idea was taking shape in her mind.
"After the fact,"
she muttered softly. In front of her, Caliban frowned slightly, as he no doubt wondered what the hell she was talking about. So she explained.
"You said that wish magic was cast after the fact, that it was usually like vengeance."
Caliban waited, his gaze narrowing.
"Well, as far as I'm concerned, justice is the best revenge."
She looked down at the rubies, imagining the magic that was in them that could give them such a pure, gorgeous, vivid color.
"And the best justice is the kind that sets things right."
She made up her mind then and there. She held her arms out completely and said in a loud, clear voice,
"I wish the magic that made these black diamonds into rubies belonged once again to the Unseelie King."
The earth waited just a moment. It was like a double take, as if the universe just wanted to be sure it had heard her correctly. Then the ground rumbled a bit, and Miniver gasped, glancing down to see pebbles dance slightly across the dirt. Suddenly the rubies in her hands cracked open like four hatching eggs, and her head jerked back up. Red mist coalesced above the broken stones. In time, that mist darkened, and sparkles of black shimmered within it like pixie powder. It swirled higher above her hands, four little whirlwinds of escaped magic. Caliban watched it in frozen fascination, his amethyst jade eyes wide with untold emotion. He straightened, as if he knew the magic was about to come for him, and just then, it did exactly that. The four tiny tornadoes of magic swirled together all at once, grew to 10 times their mass in a single heartbeat, then bent in the air, forming a spear of sharp and potent power. That spear rushed at Caliban with merciless speed. He managed a single step back before the sparkling spear pierced his chest and buried itself in his body, directly over his heart. He stumbled back a bit, but caught himself as the last of the magic seeped into him. His body started to glow, shedding an aura of red first, then bright pink, and finally a deep dark purple that faded into black, and then nothing. A spark of illumination hit the amethysts in Caliban's eyes, lighting them on purple fire. That fire coalesced in his pupils, becoming an actual flickering flame that she could almost hear sizzle and pop. Then that, too, vanished. In that aftermath silence, Miniver realized she'd been holding her breath. She waited. Caliban looked down at his hands. Slowly he placed those hands to his chest. Miniver swallowed hard. A gentle breeze picked up a lock of her hair and brushed it against her cheek. Finally, the Unseelie King looked back up at her. He smiled. "The wounds are healing." He shook his head and let out a laugh. "I don't have a fucking clue how, but you did it, Miniver. You actually set magic free from rubies." Miniver released the breath she'd been holding, and swooned a little when dizziness hit her. She'd been so terrified that she'd done something wrong, like accidentally hurt him.
"It isn't supposed to be possible," he said, suddenly taking the single step toward her that closed the gap between them.
He reached out like lightning to snatch her hands, holding them tight.
"You keep surprising me. The gods only know what you're capable of."
He turned her hands over and very tenderly kissed the back of each one. The gesture was so chivalric and unexpected, Miniver was caught completely off guard. Her jaw went slack and her eyes widened. She felt her breath hitch and her heart flip-flop in her chest.
"Why am I here?"
her inner soul questioned again, a small voice that whispered at the back of her budding senses.
"Why does the Unseelie King care like this?"
"We're getting out of here," he told her, releasing her hand somewhat reluctantly and smiling a devil-may-care grin that made her legs feel tingly.
"I'm going to transport us. You've done enough."
"But you mean you can now?"
He just continued to smile, Miniver's knees felt strange. Okay, so he can. The magic she released from the rubies must have restored him quite a bit. Which meant they had been draining him just as much. Whoever they were up against was exceedingly dangerous.
I thought we didn't know where to transport because the bad guys were one step ahead of us,
she ventured.
It just so happens that I know of a few places they will never expect us to go.
His grin broadened confidently. It was positively wicked now. She couldn't say anything more. Some sort of cat had taken her tongue. The king's eyes twinkled with secrets. A split second before he moved forward, his strong arm snaked around her waist, and she was pulled hard against his chest. The world tilted. She inhaled sharply, and colors blended together around her. Discombobulation followed, so she closed her eyes. A moment later she felt solid ground beneath her feet and sensed that the movement of her body through space and time had stopped. She felt Caliban move against her, shifting slightly. Then felt his lips at her ear.
"You can open your eyes now, love."
A shiver racked uncontrollably through her at the feel of his breath against her skin, and her instincts kicked in full force. She realized her hands had curled into fists, and his dress shirt was bunched up tight in her grip. She released it, brought her hands up, pushed against his chest, and took a firm step back, pulling out of his embrace. He let her go, but she caught a faint chuckle. She ignored him and focused on their surroundings. It was a jewelry store.
"Where are we?"
she asked, thinking at once of alarms and police cars and jail cells.
"Florence, Italy."
Her head whipped around.
"What?"
His smile was back. He gestured to the plethora of glass cases with their jewelry inside.
"I could think of no other place with as many rubies flagrantly on display. Finding them while they are still in the earth takes a little more work. This gives us easy access to their magic."
Miniver's eyes widened.
"You want me to use wish spells on all of these?"
He shrugged.
"Well, if you're incapable, then just say so."
His words hit her like a slap to the face, snowing over her other emotions with expert ease. The fury he'd been awakening inside her earlier at the illusory diner was back.
"If I'm incapable, that's not the issue. The issue is that this is stealing."
Some of the amusement in Caliban's gaze took a step back, and those eyes of his sharpened once more into multifaceted stones.
"Oh."
He moved to the nearest case, where several luxuriously expensive pieces were on display. One of the chokers boasted an emerald snake with two large rubies for eyes. An upper arm cuff contained no fewer than 50 smaller rubies in the design of flower petals. But most impressive of all was the brooch. It was a scarab beetle whose body and wings were three enormous, whole, bright red-pink rubies.
"These stones were once black diamonds,"
he said, gesturing to the rubies on the scarab.
"But magic was taken from an unwilling fey victim. Magic that once drained could not be returned."
He dropped his hand.
"The fey probably experienced pain, at the very least extreme weakness. And now the sale of these rubies will bring some lucky mortal untold wealth."
He turned away from the rubies and zeroed in on her with a gaze of purple ice.
"Who is the real thief here?"
Miniver looked from him to the stones in the glass. She thought about his words and, as he'd no doubt counted on, the oversensitive empathy demon inside her reared its head.
"Fine," she said softly. "I'll do it."
She took a deep breath and let it out with finality.
"But you're breaking the glass."
Chapter 12. There had been no breaking glass involved after all. Caliban simply waved his hand over the glass case, and the jewelry inside left its nest of velvet to reappear on top of the glass within easy reach. Miniver had promptly gotten to work with her wishing. She had to be careful to make sure she worded the wishes just right. With the first wish, she accidentally wished the magic back to its original owner, bypassing Caliban altogether. Though he couldn't say as much, because to do so would be admitting his selfishness, the outcome had obviously irked him. While it was right, in a manner of speaking, to return the Fey magic to its rightful owner, that wasn't why he'd brought her here. He was trying to fill up, so to speak, and in all honesty, she wanted him to as well. The stronger he was, the better he could protect her. Plus, she could empathize with the desire to refuel. She was beginning to feel the need for it herself. She tried not to let it show. For some reason, she wanted to appear strong before the Unseelie King. Maybe it was pride. Maybe his saber-rattling had gotten to her more than she'd like to admit, and she had a terrible need to prove to him that she was indeed capable of casting these wishes. Or maybe it was something else. It didn't matter, though. Whatever the reason, she forced herself to concentrate a little more with every wish she cast, and each time she found it more difficult. She was starting to feel cold. She definitely felt tired, and she was unbelievably hungry, despite the cake she'd recently gorged herself on. Somewhere out there were crazy, powerful people who wanted her dead. How did she refill? How were wishes supposed to regain their magic? She thought she knew how, somewhere inside her head where instincts resided. It was probably part of that vast store of knowledge that hit her in Oxford. Hell, her body was probably telling her exactly what she needed by making her hungry and tired. Duh. I need sleep and food. But there were quite a few rubies in the jewelry stores Caliban transported her to, and each time she stared down at one, she didn't see a stone formed in the earth by time and pressure and chemicals. She saw magic, stolen, and the angel of vengeance in her wanted to free it. Give it back. If not to its original Fae, who could be dead for all she knew, then to the man who had ruled over them for countless generations. Then at least he could protect her, because she was feeling less and less capable of protecting herself. At some point, Caliban willed the next set of ruby-encrusted jewelry to the glass tops, when darkness suddenly encroached upon her vision. It was speckled with exploding stars, and Minerva felt herself sway on her feet. She might have said something, maybe just under her breath, and then she fell. She didn't get far, and she never hit the ground. Caliban's arms were around her as if he'd been expecting this. "There now," he said, as those arms encircled her securely, like metal wrapped in velvet. With swift, deft skill, he lifted her off the ground and held her against his chest. His warmth at once infused her, sinking through her clothing and into her skin. She was so cold. He was hot with vital, ruby-red magic and power. She closed her eyes. She lacked any further choice. "I was wondering how long you would hold out," he told her, his lips directly beside her ear. "You are incredibly tough to gauge, little moonbeam, and ridiculously strong." Something about what he was saying to her was wrong. It was the kind of thing that maybe should have made warning bells sound in her head, or should have released more of that adrenaline into her body that she seemed to love so much. But Minerva was more exhausted than she'd known, and it was coursing through her now like a sleep drug. "I think it's high time we took you home." Minerva felt the world move again, but this time it chased her down an oblivion hole, and she didn't bother to try to chase it back up.
"She's resting peacefully."
Caliban turned to face his advisor as the old man hobbled into the study. He waited while Drummer set aside his cane, slowly laid back in an oversized plush chair and closed his eyes.
"Comfy?"
"Shut up,"
Drummer mumbled.
"Like that little green man from Star Wars intimates, when you reach my age, you won't look this good."
"Your mortal references are getting better. I think you worded it wrong, but I actually recognized this one."
"I've been practicing."
The old man opened his eyes and settled them like high beams on Caliban.
"You, on the other hand, have been up to no good."
Caliban had known this was coming. It couldn't be avoided. Drummer was right.
"What of